You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I suppose the easiest way to introduce myself is the simple fact of it. 47-year-old former engineer, but for the last 16 years I've been a freelance media. So it's quite a turnaround in careers. But it's been a heck of a lifestyle so far, and it's going to be another turnaround massively if things go right in October.
Right, and so when you're referring to October, you are standing as a mayoral candidate in the local elections for Tamaki Makaurau. How have you found yourself in a position to want and or need to stand as a mayoral candidate?
It gets asked a lot, is why you do it and how did I come about doing it? And it actually came about from one of those barbecue conversations when mates start discussing politics, and then it turns into bickering, and then it became, well, why don't you do it? You'd be really good at it. And we just laughed it off, and then we analysed it a bit more and worked it out and realised, well, I suddenly realised what the actual job was is not politics. Many people think it is, but the mayoral position, whilst there's politics involved, it's not. It's actually, to me, it's a leadership role that has a very strong spokesperson position. And once I got around that in my head, I thought, yeah, actually, I can do this. The leadership is no problem. And you don't actually run the city. It's not your job to run the city as a mayor, and that's another illusion. So it actually suits me. It suits who I am to do that job. So that's why I've decided to do it. But not just that, it's the bickering from my friends at the barbecue came about where we were just really upset at all the different things that were broken in our city, or we felt weren't working as well as they should be. And we realised that you could actually make change if you're willing to put your hand up and do it, if you're willing to put yourself on the line in front of the public and do it. And that's why I did it. So I want to make change, and I want to make it a better place that I, you know, I raised my family in this city, and I know how hard it is, and it's what I want to do.
So you say in the barbecue bickering, I'm sure a lot of people are used to the situation, you're discussing things that were broken in our city. What are those kind of things? What do you see needs a fix?
A lot of it was the excess spending in the wrong places. The crazy overindulgence of vanity projects rather than core services. That's what it nutted down to. But we were talking about things like the rubbish in the drains. Why is it there? Why isn't it being cleaned up? Why are our beaches dirty? Why does it look like our footpaths are broken? Why are there potholes in the road that aren't getting repaired? All these basic, simple core functions that we expect the council to do, yet we're seeing nice, pretty sculptures being put up and trinket art projects around the city and beautification projects, nothing to do with core services. And that's what was getting us going. The changes that AT were making to our roads to make it harder and harder to get around on purpose. And we were getting quite wound up over a vast array of different things in the city that we're just annoyed with. And it accumulated, and the list is so big it would take me an hour to go through them. In fact, it's so big I wouldn't be able to remember them all off the top of my head. But it was, if you nut it down, that's what it is. It's about all the little things that we were really annoyed with is what it's about, the little broken things.
If it is that level of broken things, why does that line up with the position of mayor for you?
As a former engineer, I was taught how to, because I was diagnostics and maintenance, so I was taught how to fix machines, automation equipment. So my job would be, I'd get called in when a machine is broken. They'd say to me, it's not working. And the owner and the operator, they don't know. They just own it and operate it. They'd say to me, why isn't it working? Like a mechanic. So you go in and you analyze. And once you've analyzed it, you work out what bits are broken or need replacing or should be modified to do the job properly. And that's exactly the same with any business, house, group, entity, anything. It's all about analysing what's not working, come up with a solution to fix it, and then put that solution into place. So that's why an engineer, rather than a politician, I think is actually a better way to do it.
In your analogy, you say the owner-operator is the person that is unaware of the issue, but the person is running the business in this example. Would, in this case, the mayor not be the owner-operator?
No, to me, the owner operator is the people. Right. We, me, you, we are the people who are the people working in the city. We do our daily lives. We go about doing our things. Then you've got the maintenance crew, just like a machine. You've got the maintenance. And then you've got the people who get called in to fix it and keep it running and keep it operating. To me, the mayor is, as I said earlier, is a leadership and a spokesperson role. So with the right leadership, you unify the council, you make sure the local boards are all unified together as well, and you then get the information feedback from the public about what they want, whether something's broken or they want it changed. And then it gets fed back to us, and as a council, we then go, right, well, how can we do that? So really, the public are the people using the machine, and councillors, local board, and the mayor are the people who have to keep it running. So when it's not running properly, it's our fault. It's not the people's, it's our fault. And we need to change it to suit or find the fault and fix it.
Right, I think that makes perfect sense. Do you think for too long the mayoral position has been seen, or do you think that the mayoral position is seen as the owner-operator? Do you think that's an issue within itself?
Very much so. A lot of people, I think, are misinformed about the role of a mayor. It's very important to realise that you're only one vote of 21 on a council. You've got 20 voted councillors who all come from different backgrounds, with different opinions and different ideas, who have to come together to represent the people and come up with solutions with the budget that they've got. A lot of the time, then, to me, and a lot everyone else that I'm getting feedback from, they're not listening and they're not providing the right feedback to us as people, and they're not doing what we want. There's too much ego. There's too much disjointed operation in council. It is a split council right now. We know that from last year's almost coup with the letter that went to Phil Goff. So there is a genuine A and B team inside council that needs to go. You're never going to get rid of it completely when you've got 21 people in there. But you've got to do a much better job as a leader to try and unify everything so that we can keep this machine running properly.
How do we unify it? It's like, as an independent as well, I think a lot of people see the way of unifying councils or local boards is via kind of a party system or a ticket. So you have a full city vision local board, and that's a unified board because they all represent a similar set of ideals. How do you do that on a bigger scale over a course of 21 local boards and the council?
Yeah, really good point. Not easily. Let's be honest, it's not easy. There is too much central party politics being brought into local, I believe. I do not like the idea of central parties having a play in councillors and in the mayor, because he is, our current mayor is endorsed by Labour. He's a Labour. He calls himself independent, but the press release said otherwise. He is Labour. There's plenty of councillors who are Labour endorsed, and then you've got CNR, City Vision, etc. So you're right. So it makes it difficult. Not impossible, but it makes it harder. But that's okay. I like a challenge. And the challenge is just to get them to be humans and to realise their position is for the people, not themselves. I think it's really, really important that from day one that's set out. And the slogan I used when I first decided to do this is, don't moan for change, vote for change. And people have asked me, well, what do you mean? What are you going to change? And change is the culture is what I want to change, which leans back to what you said. And the only way you change culture is by leading with the standards you expect. So I expect the standards of councillors to not be party. I expect it to be for the people. And if it's not, they need to be told and told and told again that that's their job. They're voted in there for the people. And you make them, I suppose, name and shame is a nasty way of doing it. But you make people accountable. Councillors should have KPIs and should be accountable, and so should the mayor. And so we should be publicly noted on a regular basis of what we are doing and what we're not doing. And it's almost a shame way to make people toe the line, but you might have to do that. It's not the only way, but it's a way. So it's got to be representing the people, not parties.
Certainly. So what other ways would you kind of go about changing this culture?
It's a matter of attitude. So you go into every single department, you gather the councillors together and you say, look at all these different departments that run this machine that is Auckland. let's get in there and talk to the people who are actually behind the computers, behind the desks, working in their day in, day out, and let's talk to them properly. We've also got to find a bit of the deadwood, but that's another issue. But we got to get in there and make them realize that their job as well, that they're being paid to do, is a public servant job. They might be on a 9-to-5er, but they're in the public sector as a 9-to-5er. So their job is to look after the people. And they've got to be made aware of that. Now, you don't go in there thumping your fist down and ranting and raving, this is your job. You go in there and you just talk like this, like we are. And we get people, you know, that's your job, mate. So let's do it. Let's look after these people who are making the phone calls, making the emails, asking for help. Let's do it. So that's how you slowly, progressively. It's a really difficult thing because it's very situational. I can't tell you exactly how you do it because everybody in every department's different and you treat it slightly different. But I think the mindset is important, that it's not just those councillors and local boards that we have to unify and make remind them that they're what their job is, but the people who are paid the 9-to-5ers and the officers on the council working for the people, we've got to make sure they do as well.
Certainly. In some coverage of your campaign so far, it's kind of been put across that you don't necessarily have policies. Instead, you have goals, and that's as opposed to promises as well. What do you see as the distinction between promises and goals? And what are, say, maybe 5 of your main goals? Because you've got a big list here.
It's a massive list. I've got to try and remember it all. But let's start with why no policies. And that's actually blown a few people away. They go, how can you say no policies? But I believe policies are specifically for central party politics, where you've got a group in a party, Labour, National, ACT, whoever, New Zealand First. They know what their policies are, and everybody in that party toes that party line. So that's what you're selling, that's what you're going to give to the people, or say you're going to give to the people. This is local body. This is, again, 21 different people coming together to help make the city work. I believe if a mayor comes in with policy saying this is what we are going to do, you know, treating it like central party, then you're arrogantly telling the other 20 councillors, toe the line, this is what we're doing, which is wrong. That's not what you voted in for. So therefore, all of the public are being told this is what's happening. And people vote on policy. I get it. They do. They also see the lies of policies. People are smart now. So that's why I don't have policies, because it's wrong. You should not do that. I want to work with the councillors, not dictate to them what we are going to do in this city. So it's a big difference straight away between dictatorship and leadership. We ask what the people want, not what I'm telling them I'm going to do, and this is what's going to happen. So then you end up having dreams rather than policies. And their wants, they're like, this would be so neat to do. Could we do it? Things like, one of the big ones for me is a waste to energy plant. And I've made a lot of noise about that in my campaign so far. It's the technology is now there. There's hundreds of them around the world. It would change Auckland's refuse problem dramatically for the better. And we don't actually have to pay for it, because I've had overseas companies who have said, we'll come and build it, you know, and we'll make our profit by operating it. That's fine. And you'll get some power out of the end of it, which is a nice little cream on the top, but wow, why not do it? So you got to take that to council and say, hey, how about this idea? And you take it to the people and get the mandate from them to say, yeah, we'd like to do that, rather than me saying, I'm going to build one. Well, that's wrong. How arrogant of me to say that. I want to do so many, and I know you want the list, but there's so many of them, I can't pick them off the top of my head. What have you got off your top of your head?
I have the list in front of me, which is kind of cheating.
Yeah, you're cheating.
There's a whole heap of things. Stop creation of new landfills, which I think goes hand in hand with the waste to energy plant. There's quite a few, I think, that people would label infrastructure-based kind of goals. Mm-hmm. Why for you? Is it because of your past as an engineer that you see these infrastructure things? You kind of mentioned it earlier, but what is the importance of kind of infrastructure projects for the mayor rather than the individual bodies within council?
Infrastructure is the machine, again, yeah, harping back to engineering. We need to focus on the core services to keep the city running properly. And it's so disjointed and it's so expensive at the moment. And the money is being spent in the wrong places. So we need to reorganize ourselves and go, two words are really important, necessities versus niceties. Niceties are things like a $550,000 statue in a park in Mount Eden. That's a nicety, which should not have been done, in I believe. That $550,000 should have gone to roading up Rodney, Franklin, wherever around the city that repairs need doing. So that's the difference between niceties and necessities. That's just one example. So infrastructure is so important to keep the machine going. The rest of it is fluff and vanity projects. Nice, not important, not right now. We can do it later once we get these other things working properly. And that's why my list of dreams, which I labelled the war files, is one of them. And there are things like controlling Auckland traffic. I know that's one of them, getting them back where they should be because they are just doing things that are harming the city, not making good. So, yeah, that's how it works for me with policies and promises and goals.
No, I think it's a very important and interesting distinction to make. Can I say something? So who or how do you decide? Like, some things are obvious in terms of you've got your big statue in Mount Eden, 550K. Versus the roads. That's quite a clear distinction between necessity and nicety. However, with other things or other projects, there could be an argument made for both kind of sides. So you've got something like the Penlink or the Peninsula Link versus the repairing roads out in Franklin Rodney, which has been on quite a few people's lips for quite a few years now and has been quite a prominent issue. How do you decide between what is the necessity and nicety between something like those two?
They are, as far as I can see, determined on project delivery time via budgets. Not necessarily the workforce, which we do have, that's another issue, but via budgets. By not spending money in stupid places and unnecessary things, we can then allocate the money so they both get done. So instead of desperately running out there trying to find money to do different projects, we just go, well, hang on a second, treat this like a household budget. Why don't we just pull in the purse strings a little bit, tighten them up and say, well, why are we spending on that when that money can be reallocated, which means that both of those projects can happen? So then we can do it that way. And Penlink is a slightly different example, given that we could actually do that as a private partnership. So we could get that paid for via tolls or something. But I do get what you're saying. How do you differentiate? Look, let's say the Lantern Festival. Now, the Lantern Festival is good for the city. It's a feel-good event. It gets lots of patronage. People love it, but it costs money. So do you say, is that a nicety or a necessity? And it is necessary to keep people happy and enjoying life. So that is where you have to analyse. But that's not up to me. That's up to the 20 councillors or the committee for that spending. We nut that out and we discuss it. And we go, well, is it a necessity or a nicety? Can we go find sponsors to pay for it all so that we can not put our ratepayer money into it and use that money for roads, again, as an example? So those are where there are discussions going to be had. And it's not up to me as a mayor to come in and thump my hand and say, no, that, and not that. It's about working together, and we have to.
Certainly. I'm just looking at the time. Are you all good to continue talking? Perfect.
Ample.
Sweet as. So continuing along that, do you think that there's potential for perhaps like cultural events or cultural festivals or kind of the arts, etc., to suffer at the hands of infrastructure in that case, if we are distinguishing just due to kind of what people generally see as necessities and making a city work?
Yeah, there will be. There'll be pain. There will be some pain and hurt. But at the moment, we are so broke. The Auckland City is so much in debt that everyone needs to put up their hands and go, okay, breathe a little, we get it. We might have to stop something for a year or 2 years while we reallocate the funds and do some tricky budgeting, move things around rather than continually trying to raise the taxes, which is the rates and all the little add-ons that we do in this council system to bring in more money. How about we change the tack a little bit, stop spending so much, and then reanalyze how much money we've got from there? It's not an overnight thing either. It's going to be a process. But there are going to be things where people go, I'm really sorry, like the Christmas parade. There were various reasons. It was such a great thing, and we do need to bring that one back. And that's where we pick and choose. Then a group will say, well, ours is just as important. This is where the arguments will happen. And that's the deep difficulties of being in local body politics. We're just going to have to nut that through. But there are going to be some people that will not appreciate having funds removed from one thing and given to another. But I think everybody has to just realize we're all in the same boat here, and we've all got to take one for the team and realize it might be a 5-year process. Or Starlight Symphony, there was one that was pulled because no more sponsorship. And so Auckland City said, well, we can't pay for it. It was a great concert, free concert yearly. You can't pay for it, too bad. Sorry, I know we're missing out on a concert, but it's just the way it is.
It is somewhat of the sad reality of it. One other thing on your war file of kind of dreams and goals is putting community groups and sports back as a priority. How do you balance that again within this kind of conundrum that we have?
Yeah, it's more the way that they were have been treated lately. And the examples are Chamberlain Park, Mount Wellington kart track, which was used by rollerbladers, little mini bikes and all sorts, Western Springs. There was a hall in South Auckland that was used by roller skaters that was pulled from them. There's an archery base in South Auckland that's been pulled because someone else with more money has come along with a better project, and council's gone, oh, we can make more money off this, so we'll ignore the lesser community sport that was in there. That is wrong, because council's job is, that's not what they should be doing. All of these things have been done for vanity and land grabs, and it's harsh, but that's the truth. It's Panuku, RFA, and for Chamberlain, a local board that wants half of Chamberlain to make a few parks when there's no need. There is actually no need. So that's what I want to get rid of. I want to get rid of that mentality of let's kick these little groups out because they're only small and tiny and meaningless. They would never do that to rugby or cricket. You'd never see council, RFA or Panuku, coming in and saying to a cricket ground, you're out, we want to use the land for container storage, which is what they've done at Mount Wellington. That would never happen in cricket or rugby. Why? We all know why. And so we've got to get rid of that mentality and say to and make people understand that a little rollerblading club is just as important as the guys playing rugby. They're still humans, they just got a different sport. So that's what I want to do in that, is get that community spirit back and away from this mentality of and the bureaucrats of trying to control what people do.
You mentioned Chamberlain Park there, and some people have mooted that perhaps instead of it being transformed into parks or recreational space, multi-use recreational space, it instead gets rezoned for housing, or say would be sold for housing. Would that be something that you would consider a better use of land grabbing, or is it the same issue at heart?
Yeah, leave it alone. Leave it alone. And you couldn't develop on there anyway because of the sub base, the volcanic under there, the flow, it's terrible. And the analysts know this, and that's why apparently there's another $1 million about to go into more analysis by consultants. So they've made their money, they're happy. They're wringing their hands all the way to the beach houses. So we're spending $1 million to get an analysis done to tell us that we can't turn it into parks. That's a good spend. And if they come back and say, actually, we could, but it's not going to cost $20 million. It'll cost you $40 million. And then someone's signing off on that to make it happen. Well, it's crazy. There's no genuine, real need to do it. Let's put that money into somewhere else. You know, you can build a high school, on average, for 1,000 students for $40 million. Now, that's not the job of local government. That's central. But West Auckland, out in Kumu Way, they need a high school. They haven't had one. $40 million and saying, well, we'll pay for it now and the government can borrow the money off us or something, rather than spending that on a modification to Chamberlain Park that's not really needed. See, that's where I mean money's going in the wrong direction. It's just silly, silly spending in the wrong places. So you just leave it alone. Why bother touching it? It works as a golf course. It has high patronage as a golf course. People are happy. It doesn't cost. Just leave it.
So then I think that's a fair enough point, especially with the schools, which again would have a knock-on effect and ease other things around that area, so less travel times going to other schools, and so on and so on. A few other things that you've got on the list seem like small things to a lot of people, but it is a goals list rather than policies. A few of these, which actually caught my eye as a bit of a hippie, you wouldn't be able to tell. Talking about free permit berm gardens. No more weed spraying with chemicals. There's the catchment nets on pipe outlets. And a few things around that. Along with the waste and energy plant, these seem to be kind of quite, not necessarily forward or progressive environmental ideas, but certainly ones that aren't often talked about in local body politics and the election race so far. Why are these important to you? And could you explain a few of them to the listeners so they understand what they are?
Okay. So berm gardens. We've got a lot of berms in Auckland. There's a lot of places where there are no berms, but we've got places where there are berms. And you're actually allowed to build gardens on them if you get a permit. But you've got to pay. It's just another penalty tax, you know. Yeah, we'll put your name in the list on the database, but you got to pay for us to do that. That's crazy stuff. Make it free. You can still have a database so you know who's got a berm garden and who hasn't. Because there's a couple of cool factors here. One, it looks nice if it's maintained, and you can have people checking on it. That's not hard. And two, if you plant the right plants, you can do a lot of good for the society. We can plant the right horticulture for bees, for example. Let's get our bee population humming again, so to speak. Let's plant maybe community gardens. Let's put some rosemary out there that everyone can come along and just, when they're doing their roast lamb, have a bit of rosemary, there you go, it's all yours. Do these nice things to make it look good, rather than just having a grass verge that has no purpose. I'm also okay with people parking on berms. I know a lot of people don't like that, but I'm okay because there's certain places where that's desperately needed to happen because our streets are so skinny in so many suburbs. A lot of the areas, the population is growing, where we've got more and more people living in these houses, more and more cars on the road, parking on the gutter, and you can only get a single car down there. You try and get emergency services or anything down there and people are moving and backing and swerving and dodging. Well, put two wheels up on the curb. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Or build a nice garden. So that's my theory there. That's what that's about. And so there's two little reasons for doing that.
Just better utilization, really.
It's wasted space.
Yeah. Totally understandable. Carbon sequestration is another thing that could be put in with that. What about the other things as well?
Well, the catchment nets on outlet pipes, they're being used around the world. And we've got some samples, I believe, in New Zealand to test. It's a shame we have to have them. That's been nice if we didn't have to have them. It is an ambulance at the halfway down the cliff. And we'll get in time, we'll solve the other problem of how this rubbish gets there. We'll get to that in the next 50 years. But for now, let's try and help solve the problem we've got. Look after what we've got. So let's get some catchment nets and let's do those little projects. Let's put the filters on all our drains so that we can stop them getting filled and chocker with rubbish and then the floods around the city. Everything snowballs. Everything has an effect. It's that old physics thing, you know, one action opposite equal reaction. Well, it's not quite two steel balls banging together, but it's the same thing. You have rubbish, you got bad beaches, you got waterways, you got bad oceans to swim in. So let's try and do that. Then we'll work our way up through to the drains where that stuff's going in, then into people dumping, etc., etc. It all leads on, all actions, 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 and it's just a progressive thing. And again, it's sad we have to do it, but we've got to do it. And that's some of the core services that we've got to provide. So we've got to take money from somewhere to do it, and that's why some other things will miss out, because we're humans and we've made a lot of mistakes and we've got to try and fix them slowly.
Certainly. One last thing I'd like to touch on is, one of the goals is to remove the fuel tax, which a lot of people, I think, would be happy to hear. It seemed to be quite the contentious policy that's been implemented. However, you suggest to replace it with an electronic toll system, which, again, is another kind of alternative that a lot of people have been divided around it. A lot of people aren't happy with an ETS or with the fuel tax. Could you explain your objection to the fuel tax and what an electronic toll system is and why you think it's better than the fuel tax for Auckland?
Okay, so yeah, get rid of the fuel tax because it's simply unfair. We need to raise funds. That's true. We need it. We can only save so much money. We still need some more. But it targets unfairly a lot of businesses and a lot of families. So if you have, for example, a business that, let's pick a lawnmower, weed eater, little machinery business, they have to pay fuel tax on a weed eater, on a lawnmower, on a little baby bobcat, on all these little things. Why should they? That's not right. So you've then got mum and dad who all they do is they take their kids to school, go to the mall, go to the supermarket. That's their run. And now they're paying a tax for that. And it hurts them in the pocket. So you're thinking, you go, well, how can we make that easier on them, make it fairer on businesses, make it fairer on people who aren't causing congestion? Let's remove the tax then. And then we say, right, we've got rid of it. How do we still raise some money? Because we still need some for our own roading infrastructure. Well, then let's do a congestion tax. How do you do that? You put electronic tolls in certain places. There's one on the northern motorway. There is used to be the Auckland Harbour Bridge. Well, you can still do that. And you can say, well, if you're going to be a person that travels and clogs up the roads into the city every day or into certain areas, well, then, yes, you help pay for all the mods to make it better for you and for everyone else. That's how I see it. User pays is more the thing. Now, they're saying user pays everybody. I'm saying user pays certain. And I think the majority would go for that. I'm pretty sure they would. The electronic toll system works pretty easily. You know, you drive under, it takes a photo of your thing. Or you can do it the way they do overseas, where you can pre-buy a certain amount of beeps. It sits on your dash, and every time you go under, it's 1, 2, 3, and it just clocks up. Cheap. You do it cheaply, and then you can also grade it. You can analyze it, and you can go, well, buses should either pay none or have this amount, trucks, taxis, Ubers, whoever, motorbikes, yep, they've got to have one too. Everybody, but you can scale it, and you can change it. And I think it's the right idea. It's not for me to say that's my policy, we're going to do it. It's up to me to go and say to the people, if you want it, vote for me. I'll then bring it into council and present it and try and make it happen. And that's what I want to do.
No, I think that's fair enough. Would you see those as being implemented kind of in the central city area? Do you think that's the high priority area to put congestion charges?
I think yes. I also think it could have some value maybe in just certain sections of the North Shore. There could be a place to have it in some, not the entire motorway, just little bits, and you just get one. Maybe central or maybe more southern. Maybe we do trucks as they're coming in to go to the ports. And so they have to pay a little bit for causing the congestion. It's not their fault, but it's just the way it works. So we just do it that way. I don't have any gospel sites. Maybe the Waterview Tunnel, maybe Penlink, definitely. There's no argument. If I could say we're starting Penlink tomorrow, sign it up, and there'll be tolls on there, I think everyone in Whangaparoa would go, yep, no problem, let's do it. So I think there might be some pushback from some areas, but then agreeance in some areas, and that's what we've just got to nut out.
One last question for you. If you could leave the listeners with three things to remember about you, what would those three things be?
Okay, I think the first one is non-political. I'm just a grassroots normal person that wants to make a difference. Two, it's not about power for me. I don't have any personal agendas here. I'm in it. I suppose I do have a personal agenda, in it to make the city better for me, which by default will make it better for everyone else. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I think honest and transparent is the other one. I call a spade a spade. I'm happy to out things and be open with everyone and tell them exactly what's going on. I don't want to hide things. No more behind the boardroom door deals. For me, everything's out in the open. And well, unless the lawyers say, oh, you can't say that. But you know, but generally, that's what I am as a person. They'll just get genuine honesty and transparency from me. And that's what I want to bring. I think it's something different that has not been seen much in politics. Occasionally it has. We need more of it, so that's why I'm putting my hand up to do it. So that's what I'm thinking.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.